Welcome, everyone, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and let's begin, as we usually do, with coming together for a few moments of silence. Just a reminder, if you have any background noise, if you need to move around, you can press star 6 to mute your line. So turning within. Simply finding our willingness to turn within to the love that we are. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. And whatever we need to hear tonight, whatever we need to share, we can trust that the words will be there, we'll hear what we need to hear, we'll say what needs to be said as we feel moved and guided by the Holy Spirit, who we place in charge of our call tonight. So taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And when you're ready, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. All right, so we will pick up reading where we left off last week. And if you have the Sparkle edition of A Course in Miracles, we are on page 278. The subheading is Guiltlessness and Invulnerability. If you have the original edition by the Course in Miracles Society, it is Chapter 11, Part 10, also called Guiltlessness and Invulnerability, and it's on page 233 of the original edition. And last but not least, if you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's the very beginning of Chapter 13. It's page 236 in FIP. It'll be under the introduction. Chapter 13 is called The Guiltless World. So again, page 278 in the Sparkle, 233 in the original, and 236 in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. Okay. Guiltlessness and invulnerability. If you did not feel guilty, you could not attack, for condemnation is the root of attack. It is the judgment of one mind by another as unworthy of love and deserving of punishment. But herein lies the split, for the mind that judges perceives itself as separate from the mind being judged, believing that by punishing another, it will escape punishment. All this is but the delusional attempt of the mind to deny itself and escape the penalty of denial. It is not an attempt to relinquish denial, but to hold on to it. For it is guilt that has obscured the Father to you, and it is guilt that has driven you insane. So I'll pause there. So this is pretty clear that all attack stems from guilt on a deep, deep, deep level. And this is interesting that we are reading this tonight, because I was noticing over the past couple days, I've been noticing a lot of vacillating in myself with peace and sort of vacillating. Again, how we've talked about that idea where you have one foot in the Holy Spirit's camp and one foot in the ego's camp, and you're still not certain, you know, which you want, or we're not certain yet that we want the Holy Spirit. I've been noticing this vacillation, and the times that I felt lack of peace, normally I would call it maybe fear or, you know, whatever the word may be, but I noticed this time that even if I would call it fear, there was still an undercurrent of guilt even beneath that. It sort of struck me that we've agreed upon what these feeling words mean in terms of fear or anxiety or whatever. And yet, in my own experience, just in these past couple of days, looking really, really closely, there seemed to be that undercurrent of guilt throughout whatever the seeming form of the feeling was. So this is just interesting for me that we started off with reading this tonight, because it's saying that we believe that we're guilty, and that fuels pretty much all the problems that we think we have. So I'm wondering if anybody had anything come up while we were reading this first paragraph. One of the other things that I'll share is just this middle sentence I thought was pretty striking, where it says, okay, I'm just going to actually read beginning with the second sentence. It is the judgment of one mind by another as unworthy of love and deserving of punishment. But herein lies the split. So we know how we've talked about a split mind before. For the mind that judges perceives itself as separate from the mind being judged, believing that by punishing another, it will escape punishment. All this is but the delusional attempt of the mind, of the mind to deny itself and escape the penalty of denial. So there, just the fact that we think we have this mind that can judge another mind, we're creating that split right there. You can see that idea of separation, that there is a you and a me that are separate from one another. So that just struck me as being quite interesting. Oh, and I have another example. I feel like I'm talking a lot, so please, if anybody wants to jump in. I have an example, something that happened tonight. So I mentioned just starting off the call with noticing that sort of undercurrent of guilt despite whatever the other feeling word may be. It was any feeling beside peace, essentially, where I was noticing this undercurrent of guilt. And I was really looking forward to the call tonight, because I was noticing even during the day today, vacillating between, you know, peace and lack of peace. And just earlier when my husband and I were cooking, I was again feeling that sort of undercurrent of, it wasn't anything big, it was just unease, you know, just not quite fully peaceful. And we were cooking and I guess just creating a lot of steam on the stove. And he pressed a fan button that's on. We have like one of those microwaves that is over the stove, above the stove. He pressed the fan button, and immediately this big fan was like whoosh, sucking up, I guess, the steam, but we never turn it on. So I immediately was like, oh, don't do that. You know, it's dusty. Like, we're cooking. Like, now's not the time to do it. And I snapped at him for turning on the fan. And then I immediately felt guilty afterwards for doing so. So I came in the other room, and I just was sitting still, and he sensed, you know, that something was up, so he came in, and I said, I feel guilty. You know, I just attacked you. But I said, I realized, like, I see so clearly that I had that unease first. I had that subtle feeling of guilt first. You played a role. You agreed to a part to act out my unconscious guilt, because as the Course talks about, perception is a mirror, not a fact. So he agreed to play to do that. So then I could now blame something outside of myself for me feeling the way that I'm feeling, rather than going to the deeper place, which was that the guilt was there already, and that I called forth this experience as a witness for that guilt. And in that recognition and looking at that with the Holy Spirit and sitting for a moment with him and being willing to see that differently, the whole situation just lifted and there was the peace again. So I hope that makes sense. I hope I explained that.
Was any of that on a conscious level, really? You know, his part in it.
His part? I don't think so. I mean, he just got the impulse suddenly to, I mean, why he turned that on now, even living in this house 9 years and he's never turned the fan on before. So I don't think it was conscious. If it was, you know, conscious, maybe we would have been like sort of playing with that idea. But like, seriously, we never turned that thing on. We've been living here for 9 years now. So so I don't think it was conscious. But what was conscious, on my part at least, was, you know, this recognition that the guilt was already there, and again, the willingness
right.
to see it differently and to not place the cause of my distress outside of myself, because the distress, again, was the belief, the feeling of guilt, not that he was causing me to feel, you know, he caused me to lash out. There's never that cause outside of ourselves. It always goes back to our mind.
But there has to be something very subtle going on here in these situations. I mean, I can relate to this.
Uh-huh. And so subtle, do you have any other...
I can't really...
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. It'll come up.
Mm.
So how about we read the next paragraph? The acceptance of guilt into the mind of God's Son was the beginning of the separation, as the acceptance of the atonement is its end. The world you see is the delusional system of those made mad by guilt. Look carefully at this world, and you will realize that this is so. For this world is the symbol of punishment, and all the laws which seem to govern it are the laws of death. Children are born into it through pain and in pain. Their growth is attended by suffering, and they learn of sorrow and separation and death. Their minds are trapped in their brain, and its powers decline if their bodies are hurt. They seem to love, yet they desert and are deserted. They appear to lose what they love, perhaps the most insane belief of all. And their bodies wither and gasp and are laid in the ground and seem to be no more. Not one of them but has thought that God is cruel. I'm going to keep reading. If this were the real world, God would be cruel. For no father could subject his children to this as the price of salvation and be loving. Love does not kill to save. If it did, attack would be salvation, and this is the ego's interpretation, not God's. Only the world of guilt could demand this, for only the guilty could conceive of it. Adam's sin could have touched none of you had you not believed that it was the Father who drove him out of paradise. For in that belief, the knowledge of the Father was lost, since only those who do not understand him could believe it. So I'll pause there. So this, again, says it pretty clearly. The world you see is the delusional system of those made mad by guilt. And I feel like that sort of sums it up. This is one of the paragraphs that when I first found the course, although, you know, this paragraph, the earlier one that we just read about, you know, children are born into it through pain and in pain, all those things that feel, you know, they seem kind of like downers, but how true is it if we look at it? This is one of those paragraphs that sort of said it like it was, you know, it said it like it is. And in my searching for looking for something that, you know, made sense, that would explain this crazy world to me, this was, you know, one of those sections that really resonated with me. And if this were all real, it says God would be cruel. But the good news is that it's just us who are, again, who can allow our perception to be shifted in order to see what the Course talks about being the real world, which is that different set of eyes, different vision, different set of glasses, rather than the ego's glasses. We're using the Holy Spirit's glasses to see differently. So I want to pause there. Anybody have any comments, any insights, any examples or questions come up so far?
I was looking at your website. There was a video. I don't know who the woman was. She's very sweet and kind of blonde, and she was talking about being how we're sometimes afraid to ask for a more peaceful perception. Mm-hmm. And she talked through this, and I thought it was so nice because she said, I was in a situation with friends, and I was having the best time, and I stopped, and I held my hands open and said to God, more of this, please. And, you know, all of this can be kind of depressing when you read this. Mm-hmm. And I think the answer really, and I've been kind of working with this throughout the week, remembering to just say, more peace, please. I'll have more peace now. Mm-hmm. And it happens. And it kind of, it's so interesting because I never really thought of it that way before. But I think because of the guilt and the unworthiness that the world teaches, and it's kind of a subtle undercurrent in the world, when you're out in the world, to just stop and say, I'll have more peace now, thank you. Mm-hmm. Contentment also, because I'm kind of a restless sort. And I've been asking for more peace and contentment. And remembering to do that, it's really powerful. Because I was in a couple of situations this week that were not peaceful at all. And by just stopping and asking, mm-hmm. Oh, I'll have more peace now. Walked out of work at feeling so peaceful and contented, I can't even tell you.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's
that's
like
awesome.
We need these reminders. We need these reminders. Your website is really cool. I love it.
Oh, well, thank you.
When
thank
I
you.
Take the time, you know, to
yeah,
tune
well that,
in.
Well, what you're hitting on, too, that I want to sort of draw out, because this you were subtly saying this, I think. I've also noticed in myself, we know that we should ask, right? Like, I'll have more peace, please. And you said, you know, we have to ask. We have to actually do it. I've found that, again, it's another subtle sort of ego thing. Once we know that we should ask, knowing that we should ask is different than actually asking. And that's just what I wanted to sort of throw out there, is that I've noticed for myself that it's like, oh, I'm actually not asking, even though I know that that's what I should do. So, like, it's part of my mind is thinking that it's asking. You know, part of me is thinking, but I'm actually not. I know that that's what I should do, but I'm not actually doing it. And so that simple phrase, I'll have more peace, please, or, you know, whatever it may be, is actually asking. It's actually pausing.
It's asking. But, you know, I just never really thought of it that way before. Mm-hmm. And when she pointed this out, it was like, yeah. Yeah, I'll have more of that, please.
Yeah, yeah. That also calls to mind for me, I think Carla might be on the line. I'm hoping that she is. We were talking in previous calls about ego backlashes and, you know, being afraid of the ego backlashes, and that for some reason this theme has been staying with me, because I've gone through times where I felt, you know, like, oh my God, what is my ego going to do next? You know, like, I'm feeling all this peace, and what, you know, it's going to drop the other shoe. I realized this week that it was no longer really helpful for me to think about it as an ego backlash. Instead, and this actually came up during the Miracle Share conference, I think by Susan Dugan. She was one of the people who spoke in the conference. She says when things start kicking up for her, or, you know, I guess she experiences lack of peace in whatever million forms it can be, she says, I simply am being afraid of love again. Like, I'm just being afraid of love again. And I love that. And that came forward for me again this past week in thinking about this idea, you know, of ego backlashes, because the ego really only has power if we give it power. And so if we're thinking of it as an ego backlash, that's huge power that we're giving the ego. We're giving it, we're believing that it has the power to do something to us of its own, you know, accord. And so I love that reframe of, oh, I've just become afraid of love again, because it's keeping, you know, the source of whatever is happening, we know, is coming from somewhere deep in our sleeping split mind. And we're just being afraid of love again, and that's all. And so I just, that was a really helpful reframe for me, and I just wanted to throw it out there and share it with everybody because I thought it might be helpful.
Absolutely.
And it just, it reminded, what you said, Paul, it reminded me of that with, you know, I'll just have more peace, or, you know, I'm just...
Oh,
just
more love here. Oh, I'll have more love. Thank you.
I like that.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, I love that. I love hearing about, I'm not the only one that has that thought that sometimes I'm afraid of my ego because just to give you something simple, I'm standing in the bedroom 2 days ago, and I was just changing my clothes, and all of a sudden I felt myself tipping over, and for no reason. It wasn't like there was a strong wind or the place got picked up. I was just standing, all of a sudden I was tipping over. I hit my foot on the door, hit my arm on the nightstand, and I'm going, what the hell was that? And then I just got pissed off. I'm like, you know, I'm really, really tired of this stuff, how I'm trying to hurt myself. And I'm standing here doing nothing, and then all of a sudden I'm tipping over. So I just said, no, that's not happening. So I just stood up and kind of just, like, moved about what I was doing. But it's so subtle, and it comes up in ways that I just are so unexpected that I guess it just really annoys me that it's still there. Like, just as much as I want to wait.
That's where you want to say, more balance, please.
Yeah, just as much as I want. Can I finish this statement?
Sure,
yes,
please.
Thank you. Just as much as I want to say, you know, just as much as I want to stay asleep, I also want to wake up. So it's like they're dueling, and the power is, like, unbelievable. And it feels as though I have no control of it sometimes with stuff. You know, sometimes stuff happens, and I wind up looking around like, what just happened? And now I have to pick up the pieces, you know. So this is amazing. And I related to what you were saying, too, earlier, Corinne, about the guilt and feeling uncomfortable about the situation that took place for you. And, you know, stuff came up for me today, and I just had to acknowledge. I cut somebody off this morning driving, and the gentleman was basically in his ego state and almost wanted to pull over and look like he wanted to snatch me out the car. And I just looked at him, and I just ignored him because I didn't want to engage my ego with his, knowing that it was senseless and there was nothing good that was going to come out of that. I did acknowledge that it was fear for both of us and that I made a mistake. And I just realized, too, that that does happen from time to time, just driving. People don't mean to cut me off, but it's happened to me before, too. So I just moved on. The subtlety, and it just feels like the sneakiness of this ego, it just sometimes, like, really drives me to distraction, and it creates more anger, even though I know that's ego, too. So I'll get through it. But I need to say it in order to get through it and be willing to look at it differently. And I am. And I'm grateful for your willingness. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And that's what we come here for every week, is to, you know, share what we need to share. But also, you know, as we are sharing it and having that willingness to see it differently, we're all joined in that. And so we're strengthening it in each other. We're helping each other. So thank you for sharing that. That was really helpful. Okay, so let's read the next paragraph. This world is a picture of the crucifixion of God's Son. And until you realize that God's Son cannot be crucified, this is the world you will see. Yet you will not realize this until you accept the eternal fact that God's Son is not guilty. He deserves only love because he has given only love. He cannot be condemned because he has never condemned. The atonement is the final lesson he'd need learn, for it teaches him that having that never having sinned, he has no need of salvation. This paragraph, these first few sentences, remind me, so this world is a picture of the crucifixion of God's Son. So think about all the conflict and all, you know, the strife that, like, even just, you know, we're describing. This world is a picture of the crucifixion of God's Son. And until you realize that God's Son cannot be crucified, this is the world you will see. This makes me think of that expression that, you know, we seem to be in the world right now, but we're not of it. It makes me think of how we've talked in previous calls about how, how do I say this? In this world, we have these separate identities. I'll use myself as an example. I believe that I'm Corinne, and so the stronger I'm identified as Corinne and think of myself as Corinne, the more of those ego witnesses I'll be calling forth, because what am I sort of reinforcing but this idea that I'm a separate self? The peace comes from recognizing that I am not Corinne. That's where, and that's what reminds me, what came up for me in reading this sentence, that until we realize that God's Son cannot be crucified, in other words, you are not, and fill in your name in the blank, I am not Corinne, you know, we're going to see instead the world of separation if we think that we are these separate identities. And in the Sparkle edition, it says, yet you will not realize this until you accept the eternal fact that God's Son is not guilty, in all caps. And there's that phrase, Paula, that I always hear in your voice, not guilty. And it's nice in big letters right there. And it's beautiful, too, this last sentence. The atonement is the final lesson he need learn, for it teaches him that never having sinned, he has no need of salvation. So that's the same idea that, you know, we're exercising vigilance and choosing for the Holy Spirit only to ultimately realize that vigilance is not necessary, because what we are remains completely unchanged. It is. It will always be. It will always be that safe, eternal, peaceful state that we all abide in, and it needs no vigilance because it just is. It's only our awareness that has drifted away from that, which we are currently exercising vigilance to bring back to our awareness of what is. Next paragraph. Long ago, we said that the Holy Spirit shares the goal of all good teachers, whose ultimate aim is to make themselves unnecessary by teaching their pupils all they know. The Holy Spirit wills only this, for sharing the Father's love for his Son, he wills to remove all guilt from his mind that he may remember his Father in peace. For peace and guilt are antithetical, and the Father can be remembered only in peace. Love and guilt cannot coexist, and to accept one is to deny the other. Guilt hides Christ from your sight, for it is the denial of the blamelessness of God's Son.
Corinne, this is Lissa. I'm still stuck in the last thing you were talking about. Could you say more about the idea that you were talking about with vigilance?
Sure. So vigilance is one of those terms that we'll see, you know, throughout the course that, you know, we are one of the quotes that comes to mind at the moment is how the course says we're much too tolerant of mind wandering. You know, we're letting our mind wander all the time. And it's through our vigilance, it's through practicing consistently noticing, you know, where our mind is going, and choosing to bring our awareness back to the Holy Spirit, choosing to come back to our willingness again and again and again. So in a sense, it's like we're building a muscle, so to speak, just like you go to the gym and lift weights. It's like we're building a muscle to remember to ask the Holy Spirit, to remember to turn to the Holy Spirit. And as we do that and build up that, you know, sort of, it's not really obviously a muscle, but as we build up that muscle, you know, we're exercising vigilance as we're turning to the Holy Spirit again and again and again. Ultimately, what we realize is that we don't need vigilance because our true state of what we really are, which is, again, that love, that peace, that joy, that's constant. That's forever unchanging, and that's eternal. And we don't have to be vigilant for it because it always is. It's always constant. It's always there. It's just our awareness that has drifted from it. So ultimately, we learn that we don't even need to be vigilant as we you know, remember truly what it is that we chose to forget. Does that help?
Oh, a lot. Thank you.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. You are welcome. Anybody else so far have any comments or questions or insights or anything to share?
I guess I'll just share, Corinne. It's not really a question, but I found it really helpful what you shared earlier about that feeling of unease and going back and forth, because I've felt that too this week. And I think the whole idea that it's based on guilt and not fear is something I'm going to look at more. I think it's really interesting because I hadn't thought of it like that. I just automatically was like, oh, you know, this is fear coming up because of all the things going on in my life. But, and then this whole, you know, what we were just talking about vigilance and remembering that we can choose to hand it over to Spirit and to ask for peace is so important. But there's just something about this guilt piece that's, I don't know why it's new for me or standing out, but I found it really helpful.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
I feel like you explained that very clearly. And, yeah, it's what you said, too. It feels new for me, too, because I've always looked at it as fear, and it's just been, for some reason or another, lately bubbling up to the surface recently, as instead, you know, recognizing that there's actually even, you know, guilt beneath that fear. We're calling it all different names, fear, anxiety,
yeah,
conflict, you know, loneliness, lack, whatever it may be. And yet the fuel that feeds all of that is this guilt.
Yeah.
So awesome. Thank you for sharing, Paul.
Thank you.
And I, just to sort of stick with this for a moment too, in the middle of this paragraph, it says, he wills to remove all guilt. It's okay. Let me back up. The Holy Spirit wills only this. For sharing the Father's love for his Son, he wills to remove all guilt from his mind that he may remember his Father in peace. So the Holy Spirit wills to remove all guilt from our minds that we can remember the love that we are in peace. So if the Holy Spirit is on our side in wanting, in willing to remove all that guilt from our mind, it makes me think about a line in the Course where it says, I just remember the term trembling with readiness. It's as if Spirit is trembling with readiness to give this to us. Spirit is trembling with readiness to remove all guilt from our mind so we can rest in the love and joy and peace that we are. Succeeding is absolutely guaranteed. If we have the Holy Spirit on our side, which we clearly do in achieving this goal, there's not a million hoops that we need to jump through. It doesn't have to be hard. That God is on our side with this, and so the outcome is, and our success are guaranteed, which is really reassuring to me. So I just wanted to highlight that.
Hey, Karen, it's Deidre.
Hey, Deidre.
It's so perfect that you just said that right now. Like, I totally have chills. I'm just going to...
I love it when that happens.
Yeah, because I had a moment it's over the last 2 weeks. I'm in the last year of a web development and design, graphic design program, and my heart really has not been in it since, I discovered A Course in Miracles and, you know, the angel work that I do. But I've committed to finishing the program because it's helped me, you know, learn to develop my own website, and all of that is really valuable for what I'm doing. And but every week in one of my design classes, we have what's called a critique. And basically what happens is everyone puts up their work, and you're basically judged by your peers about, you know, how well whatever assignment you're working on, you know, stands up to industry standards. And our instructor, you know, asks us to put these things on the wall, and she goes around and she takes her pen and, you know, like circles where we've made mistakes and things like that. And sometimes I'm really good, like I take the whole thing to spirit and I'm not triggered at all. Last week, however, I was extremely triggered, and I kept thinking to myself, like, what is going on? Like, you know, like I'm usually so much, you know, more present, more grounded, and recognize that this is just an exercise. But for some reason, some things that she said while during the critique, because she basically told me that I had to start over. And for some reason, that really triggered me. So for the next week, when I was working on my work, and I kept having to take the whole thing to spirit, and I was like, please show me what this is about. You know, like, please show me why I'm having this reaction. And what kept coming up was this idea is I was choosing to feel guilty because I was comparing myself to other, you know, seemingly other bodies in the classroom and measuring myself and deciding that I wasn't good enough, that I didn't measure up. Mm. And when I realized this in meditation, like I was meditating on it, I was like, okay, I still have this guilt. I still have this fear. I'm very afraid. I recognize that. And, you know, all throughout this week, when I was coming up to Wednesday, which was critique day, I noticed, you know, the guilt and the fear was very much still there. But I just said to Spirit, I said, I want you to take this. I want you to take this, and I want you to convert it into the strength that I know you give me on a daily basis. And I want this to be a witness to love and not of guilt and fear. And so I went in there having done all my work, you know, really working on the guidance that she gave me for fixing my work. And I walked in the class and she says, who wants to go first? And I said, I do. I said, I want to go first. Because I thought, you know, I'm going to rip off the Band-Aid. I'm just going to do it first. So I put my stuff up, and the first words out of her mouth were, oh, my God, this is so much better than last week. So it was like I made the choice with Spirit to, you know, show me a witness for love instead of showing me a witness for my own guilt and fear.
I love it. I love
and it. It was like, it was so great because, you know, like my perception of why I'm finishing the program has changed. I don't really see myself developing websites for people. That's not my purpose, but I know enough so that, you know, I can design my own stuff and upkeep my own website. And, you know, if the opportunity arises, I can help someone else. But it was just such a transforming moment because I realized that I was using that situation to judge myself and make myself guilty, and I'm not. I'm innocent.
Beautiful.
The perfect example of what this work is about.
Absolutely, absolutely. You called to mind for me two things, and the first that I'll just say is, you know, to really highlight, you know, we've come up, I feel like, with Paula, you started us off with, you know, I'll have more peace, please, and whatever it was exactly, you know, your words were. The line, you know, I want to see witnesses for love. Like, let this be a witness for love rather than for fear. I want to see witnesses for love rather than fear. That is such a powerful prayer. And what you just said, Deidre, toward the end reminded me, too, in the example that I shared earlier with the little mini conflict that I had with my husband, that Nook Sanchez prayer came forward for me, and it just did with what you said now. Holy Spirit, help me to forgive myself for using blank, this person, this situation. So Holy Spirit, help me to forgive myself for using blank to attack myself and to separate from your love.
Yeah.
You just reminded me in your words of that prayer, and that was something that, you know, had come forward for me earlier too. So, wow, beautiful. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so
thank you.
Right along those lines. Okay, just to understand, right? I do something or I create a situation where I feel guilt. I feel bad because I've done something that isn't right or something. And basically what we're saying is this is like alienating yourself from the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. When you push yourself all the way away and you say, you feel guilt, mm-hmm. and you're responding with, this is a negative thing. So we're trying to turn off guilt, right? And enrich our relationship with this.
We're trying to give the guilt to the Holy Spirit, because on this level of form, we can't help it but hurt each other, right? Like, if we're in our ego, there's going to be some sort of trouble there where, you know, we are accidentally hurting somebody else's feelings or, you know, whatever it may be. There's going to be a million causes for guilt on this level of form. So rather than ignoring the guilt or trying to stuff the guilt, it's all about giving the guilt to the Holy Spirit to ask it to be transformed, to be repurposed on behalf of our awakening, to, you know, restore our sense of peace. Does that make sense?
Beautiful. Beautiful. Now, the only quick thing, can we have part two on this next week?
Sure. Why?
Well, just that it seems like you've opened the topic, and there's just so much there.
There is. Well, the topic won't go away. It might, maybe there'll be some weeks when it seems like it takes a back burner, but the course, you know, the core of the course is about, it's our deep unconscious guilt that we carry because we believe that we've separated from God.
Actually, we believe
that we killed God in order to pull this whole thing off, which is obviously ridiculous, but the course is clear that that's our, you know, deep, convoluted belief. And so that sense of guilt, thinking that we've actually separated from our source, is what is fueling all of this. So that is ultimately, that's what we are coming to realize has no cause, that we're totally, completely guiltless.
Well, thank you for that. That is so, so true.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Deidre, did I hear your voice?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, with what I just shared with what happened in the classroom, the miracle wasn't that my teacher was like, oh, your work is so much better, because that's just on the level of form. The miracle was that, you know, she could have said there was no improvement whatsoever, but I knew that, you know, I'd done better work. Like, I knew intuitively already that, you know, I'd improved but the thing is that I wasn't in that state of mind where I was attacking myself anymore. That's the miracle.
Right.
That's the shift.
Right. Yeah, and that shift, though, showed up in form.
Yes,
with her statement. Yep.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, thank you. No, thank you. I think it's always helpful. Beautiful. You know, let's keep reading, because the whole theme of guilt is going to continue in these next upcoming paragraphs. So where are we? In this strange world, I think is where we are. In this strange world which you have made, the Son of God has sinned. How could you see him then? By making him invisible, The world of retribution rose in the black cloud of guilt, which you accepted and you hold it dear. For the blamelessness of Christ is the proof that the ego never was and can never be. Without guilt, the ego has no life, and God's Son is without guilt. As you look upon yourselves and judge what you do honestly, as you have been asked to do, you may be tempted to wonder how you can be guiltless. Yet consider this. You are not guiltless in time, but in eternity. You have, quote-unquote, sinned in the past, but there is no past. Always has no direction. Time seems to go in one direction, but when you reach its end, it will roll up like a long carpet which has spread along the past behind you and will disappear. As long as you believe the Son of God is guilty, you will walk along this carpet believing that it leads to death, and the journey will seem long and cruel and senseless, for so it is. And I'll pause there.
It seems to me that that's exactly what happened when Deidre decided that she was not guilty. Anytime we come up with that willingness,
right,
to take this guilt to the Holy Spirit, it's as if you have reached, wait a minute, time seems to go in one direction, but when you reach its end, it will roll up like a long carpet which has spread across along the path behind you and will disappear. And that's what happens when we are willing to accept our innocence, all the craziness just goes.
Yeah, yeah. It goes,
that's,
and that's
truly the miracle.
It is, and that's where we don't end up following the ego script. This is now instead the Holy Spirit's loving alternative way where time collapses, experience collapses, so we don't need to go through the ego's painful experiences anymore because we're listening to a different teacher. And how awesome is that? That's
no, and
pretty
it's
cool.
It's an ongoing process, really. It's remembering to do exactly what you just experienced, Deidre. I mean, it's just the most perfect example.
Definitely. So again, it just to reemphasize this idea that on the level of form, if we are, you know, identified with our ego, there we're going to seem to hurt each other, and yet, so it's saying we're not guiltless in time, but in eternity. You have sinned in the past, but there is no past. So we really, again, this whole idea of sin is still just a big, big mistake, a big, you know, ego game, because there actually is no past. The ego needs it, though. It needs the idea of the past. It needs the guilt to fuel its existence, its seeming existence, let's say. So let's read the next paragraph. The journey which the Son of God has set himself is foolish indeed, but the journey on which his Father sets him is one of release and joy. The Father is not cruel, and his Son cannot hurt himself. The retaliation he fears and which he sees will never touch him, for although he believes in it, the Holy Spirit knows it is not true. The Holy Spirit stands at the end of time, where you must be because he is with you. He has always undone everything unworthy of the Son of God, for such was his mission given him by God. And what God gives has always been. I love this paragraph. So the journey which we have chosen to seemingly embark on is foolish indeed, as it says. But the path of turning to the Holy Spirit, the turning back to the remembrance of how do I want to say this? I'm trying to I have all these words in my head. The path of remembering and waking up is one of release and joy. I love how it's, again, crystal clear that God is not cruel. There's absolutely nothing cruel about God, and we cannot hurt ourselves. So what we are afraid of is never going to touch us. And although we might believe that there are things that can hurt us, because the Holy Spirit knows it's not true, we're saved. The Holy Spirit is our bridge back to the remembrance of what we truly are. And I love this last sentence, too. The Holy Spirit has always undone everything unworthy of the Son of God, for such was his mission given him by God. And what God gives has always been. So, again, that's pretty cool. If the Holy Spirit always undoes everything unworthy of the Son of God, think about all the things, you know, that maybe we feel like we're struggling with that are unworthy of the Son of God. The Holy Spirit is there, trembling with readiness to allow those things to be undone as we are willing to give them over to the Holy Spirit. Next paragraph. You will see me as you learn the Son of God is guiltless. He has always sought his guiltlessness, and he has found it. For everyone is seeking to escape from the prison he has made, and the way to find release is not denied him. Being in him, he has found it. When he finds it is only a matter of time, and time is but an illusion. For the Son of God is guiltless now, and the brightness of his purity shines untouched forever in God's mind. God's Son will always be as he was created. Deny your world and judge him not, for his eternal guiltlessness is in the mind of his Father and protects him forever. So deny your world to me says, take what you think you're seeing, take what you think you're feeling, and give it to the Holy Spirit. We can't deny it of ourselves because we can't transcend the ego with an ego. We need something else outside of our ego thought system to help us out, and that's the Holy Spirit's job. So in doing so, we're exercising what the Course refers to as the proper use of denial. So we're denying our denial of truth.
See, and that to me is incredibly optimistic. You know, if you go back earlier where you were reading one of the top paragraphs, it was talking about the rules of the world end up in death.
Right.
Right, and now we're totally the other direction.
Right, and those were the rules of the world according to the ego, the earlier one.
Oh.
Yep, now we're into, a totally, totally different path, which is the path that we've chosen to wake up to, and through the Course, it's a faster way of getting there.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is. Very, very optimistic. Not from the ego standpoint, but from the Holy Spirit standpoint. Absolutely.
Right. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
This is a great call.
Oh, I need it. It's so funny. Like, I just, this is all what I needed to hear. As Earl Purdy said, Earl Purdy is one of the, you know, Course teachers. He's got a ton of YouTube videos. He's just so much fun. I love him. He was part of the conference as well. He said, I love teaching what I need to learn. And that just so rings true. So rings true. Oh, we all teach what we need to learn.
Now's the time for another deep breath.
Yeah, let's do it. Big deep breath.
Oh.
Oh, wow. I feel like that's a good place to pause for our reading. Does anybody have any final comments, questions, insights? Anybody feel moved to share anything?
Thank you.
This is Lissa. I just wanted to thank everybody for what you did share. And, you know, I got so much out of it. I just feel so blessed to have been able to listen in. Thank you so much, everybody.
Oh, awesome. Thank you, Lissa, so much for sharing. All right. Thank you, everybody. I think we're good to go. I love you all, and we'll be back next week.
Thank
you.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, family. Thanks, Corinne. Love you.
Bye.